Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson. How are you, man?
I'm now liquefied.
You've got a Coke Zero.
I've got a Coke Zero.
Which I seem to recall you saying you would never, ever drink.
This is your fault.
Wow. So this is my fault. I got you hooked.
Yes.
You learned it from watching me.
Yeah. I like normal Coke, full sugar. And last year we went through all the kind of self-control learning and switch. And you were like, Coke Zero is the way to go, Miriam and I went to a restaurant one night and I got a Coke Zero. I was like, oh, this is awful. But it's better than Diet Coke.
It is better than Diet Coke.
So I started drinking it. And now...
You like
basically
it.
The only thing I drink. So it is entirely your fault. But yes, the nervous thing though is a friend of mine said that he was listening to old podcasts off the FTC.
Okay.
And he has just come across the one where I spilt my drink. And he said, you can hear the nervousness in my voice because I spill it and literally this bright red drink goes everywhere on the carpet in the podcasting room. And he said, it sounded like you just didn't care and just kept
Who,
moving.
Me?
Yeah, you just kept moving on. Well, currently I now have a Coke Zero open next to me around lots of equipment. I feel like if any of the higher ups are listening.
As long as you don't spill it on the equipment.
Yeah.
On the floor, I don't care. In fact, these... carpet tiles.
They hide quite a lot.
Yeah,
they hide quite a lot.
Well, you can just pull up the little square and replace it. So it's not a huge deal.
But I am a little nervous because I do have history of spilling things in this room.
Okay, well, just don't spill things on this episode. Hey, we've got a review.
A review, which is ridiculous that we only have one
I know.
Since the last time.
But we need a lot more. Y'all need to talk us up. We still can't get him to go on social media.
I've only ever seen like maybe one or two shares. I've seen people start commenting. So when we share, I've noticed people start commenting, but we're not getting any shares on Twitter.
Friends, that's not good enough.
Before the church and share for your church.
Mm.
Ah,
may Jesus be big in your mentions. This is from not Jesus, less than Jesus.
I think they're less than Jesus.
Is it the less than sign?
Yeah, it's the less than sign.
So this surely it's not the greater than sign.
So this is somebody less than Jesus.
So it's less than Jesus.
That still puts you quite high.
That's pretty clever though.
Yeah.
And the title is Going, Going, Gone. 5 stars, less than Jesus says, this podcast is a home run for those serious about the local church and the gospel-centered life. Ross and Jared are a fun 1-2 punch to tackle topics ranging from the difficult to the playful. I am a better minister because of these two men's faithful commitment to the scriptures and seeing lives changed by the power of the gospel. My only concern is whether they're having too much fun for this to be considered a job.
Honestly, it's a bit of a drag every time I have to come in here to speak with Jared.
Well, it's not even a job. Like, you don't get paid for this.
I don't get paid for this. You technically,
I guess it's kind of part of my job.
For this. Friends, I don't get paid for this. Did you hear that? Like, send in your crates of Coke Zero. We accept them at Midwestern Baptist Theological
Seminary. Our payment is in good reviews. Yeah. So if you like this podcast, the compensation is totally up to you. It's like the tip jar, you know, or the tip tub. I know everyone's sick of those things, but
do you know what you just need
to
say?
We're in here cranking out good content. You know, we make it look easy.
If someone says
it's not, you got to drink your Coke Zero.
You got to drink my Coke Zero, you know, and we don't accept rewards that are increased in heaven. Like we know our reward is in heaven.
My cap's got enough feathers. I need some Apple Podcast reviews.
That's right.
Hey, it's a grab bag episode.
It's a grab bag. It's been a while since we've done the actual grab bag.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've only done it once, I think.
I think, yeah, because so then we changed
we did
it up a little bit.
The movie swap.
Yeah.
Which you know what? I'm actually thinking about the movie swap being its own thing.
Oh,
like
okay.
Doing it every 6 weeks.
Please
or eight
give me
weeks
a
or
better
something.
Movie than last time.
We'll see. Well, maybe in the future.
I need to get you through all the Christian movies. That's what we need to do.
Yeah, okay. Because I actually thought of the movie that I want you to watch.
Okay.
But I'm holding it back.
Okay,
Yeah, this is a grab bag. And the original idea behind the grab bag, I know on one grab bag episode we did our movie swap, but the original grab bag idea was basically we each come with 2 questions that the other doesn't know about. And we ask them of each other and spend a little time with these surprise questions. And Hopefully it makes for some good conversation. I guess you guys will be the judge of that in your review that you're going to leave as soon as this episode is over. I'll go first.
You go first. Okay. You go first.
Let me ask you this, Ross.
Oh, dear.
And maybe this is connected to the last episode we did about dealing with criticism. Mm. I don't know. But what kinds of people do you find it most difficult to love?
Wow, you're going for a big deep
question.
Well,
you all made fun of me before for asking silly questions or non-serious questions. So I thought, let me ask a serious question.
Okay, the two things that just immediately came to my mind. Indecisive people.
Okay.
I really struggle with indecisive people. They've got like a couple of options. They go and ask like 23 different people to give advice. Mm. They weigh that all up. They sit on the fence. They never make a decision. Everything goes by. Nothing happens.
Yeah.
Or they make a decision, then regret it and change to the other decision. And when they're doing that change, they ask 23 advisors again what they should do. I just really struggle with indecisive people. And what I'm talking about is like more major things in life. I'm not talking about what we'll have for dinner tonight. I'm more meaning just, you know, should I take this job? Should I travel to this place? Should I ask this guy or this girl out? You know, just that indecisive, constantly asking for advice. And there's two reasons why I struggle with it. Number one, my personality is like, I make a decision, I go for it, and I don't look back. It's just, so it's the opposite of my kind of personality. But second, I just think it speaks of a lack of confidence in your faith with Christ. Mm. If you know of the first important things and you know that that Christ is the Lord over your life, then you can walk into things confident that either God's going to close the door, he's going to open the door. And if the door closes, you praise God, you move to the next thing. If he opens the door, you praise God and you walk through it. So I just really struggle to think, why are you being so indecisive? Just make a decision and do it. Now, if you're a student listening to this at Midwestern Seminary, they know exactly what I'm talking about, because I've had a lot of students that come to me for advice. And I'm like, hey, just make a decision and just go for it. So indecisive people is number one. Number two, lazy people. I really struggle. Okay. And when I'm talking lazy, I'm not talking somebody that, you know, works a hard day and then puts their feet up at home. I'm not talking about somebody that has a relatively quiet life. I'm talking about somebody that knows what they need to do or should do and are known for not doing it.
Mm.
So there's a pattern in their life of, I just can't be bothered.
Interesting.
And to me, I think I know the reason why. I think it's because, and I shared this in the last episode, that my dad died young, and I live a life kind of like, this is my last day. Like, I'm not promised tomorrow. I've seen mortality happen right in front of me. I know what it looks like. And I just think, man, you're wasting your life. You're wasting every day, every moment. And I'm known for saying things like, if you've covered your work and you've worked hard and you've made, you know, good effort in life, have some fun. Go out. Speak to friends, travel, do something. If you don't have a lot of money, go for a walk, you know, go and do the free things in the city. Like, get out and do things. And to me, I find life very precious, and just people that just can't be bothered, it just really bugs me. And I need to really be careful how I am around them. And again, I've got some friends that have a tendency towards that. And I have to be really careful around them, because in some senses, it's more my issue than it is their issue, because they can decide what they want to do with their lives, but it shouldn't be based on my anger and frustration towards them. But yeah, indecisive people, because I'm just like, have confidence in the Lord. Lazy people, because I'm thinking, you've been blessed with today. Do you really want to waste it? And again, I'm not saying you can't rest, because actually that's an act of choice. I'm going to choose today to put my feet up and read my book.
Yeah,
that's not laziness. I'm talking about, I just can't be bothered.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, that I struggle to love those people. You'd be glad to know that you're neither of these.
Oh, I appreciate that. So. I wasn't really concerned about it. I just couldn't be bothered by that. But that's fascinating. One thing I noticed is a lot more time on why they are the way they are than why you necessarily struggle. It was... Dare I say, you're justifying why it's difficult to love them. Yeah. I thought about this question for myself a bit and feel somewhat chastened by it. You know, there's people like, you know, you can think of those who just, they're mean or they're irritable or they never have anything good to say, passive aggressive or whatever. Yeah. When it comes down to the people that I find it difficult to love, and I don't mean like, you know, to think kindly about or anything like that. I do. I just, in terms of like actively.
Yeah.
Conversationally, yep. I struggle. is really socially awkward people. And if I had to define, if I had to like diagnose this or analyze it, it's because I think I'm socially awkward.
I was
awkward.
About to say, are you not someone that's a bit
and
socially
awkward? So it's like, we need some, I need to be with someone who can carry a conversation. So if I'm with somebody else who's socially awkward, or I'm with somebody who's more socially awkward than me, I'm just sort of like, what are we doing? Like, this isn't, I don't know how to get out of the conversation. Yeah. It's not really even a conversation. Yeah. And I find myself getting like frustrated and
our friendship's making more sense to me.
And I start to kind of avoid them and those sorts of things too.
I remember we went to a speaking engagement you had and you were speaking and there were some socially awkward moments and I just kind of took the lead and had the conversation and we had a walk around.
Becky does
and
that
all
for
this
me
stuff.
Too.
So. I remember thinking as I'm going around, Jared's being really quiet. I wonder if I'm speaking too much. And I pulled back a little bit and you didn't start talking. I thought, oh, I see what's happening here. I meant to carry this conversation.
There's a difference between introverts, because I am an introvert and I do like talking to people. I'm an introvert and I do think I'm socially awkward, but I'm talking about like the person who just can't carry a conversation or...
Yes or no answers to every question. Like that type of...
There's things like that. Are people who... I don't want to get super specific because then someone would be like, I think he's talking about me. There are people who like, they do all the talking. You know what I mean? Oh. You're talking to them and they do all the talking and they never really ask a question and that really bothers me. I'm like, we're not having a conversation. I'm just the audience for you. that bugs me.
I think you need to stop because now you're describing me.
No, so. I'm not describing you. We're having a conversation. Yeah. I don't mean someone who likes to talk. I mean someone who does all the talking.
Yeah.
So
I talk to a lot of students just by nature of my job. And the socially awkward student is the one that says yes or no to every answer. It's like, hey, so I see you're coming to Midwestern in the fall. Is that all correct? Yes. You're looking to study your MDiv? Yes.
Yeah.
So what are you thinking about the fall? Yes. And you're just thinking,
it's coming.
Okay, it's coming. Okay, so I'm going to lighten the mood because that was a hard question.
Sorry.
Out of all the cars you have owned and driven, what has been your favorite car and why?
Of all the cars.
I feel like everyone has like car stories.
Yeah, so I'm not a huge car guy, but my favorite car... was, and I don't remember what year it was, but it probably would have been a 98, maybe 99. It was a black Ford Probe.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like I have to look that up.
It was pretty sleek for 2000. It would have been 2000. So I think it was even older than that. It was probably like 95 or 96.
It looks like a Toyota Celica almost.
Yeah. So it was like the closest I've ever had to like a sports car.
Yeah.
Two door.
Yeah.
Had the automatic headlight the headlights that come up, you know, you push the button and the headlight, I forget what that's called. Yeah. The headlights come up. Bought it used and it was so fun to drive. I had a commute from Fairview, Tennessee to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, where I went to school. I never lived on campus because I was already married. So I would commute, and it was these hills, this rural road and these big hills, and just driving that car. I mean, it was so fun to drive in that distance. But then we had Macy, our firstborn, and if you put the car seat in the back seat, which is where the car seat's supposed to go, Becky couldn't sit in the passenger seat. Because the seat had to be pushed up.
All the way forward,
so she couldn't sit in there. So she always had to sit in the back with Macy.
Yeah.
And she had to sit behind me. And we realized this is not advantageous. And this is not a family car.
No, it's not.
And Beck had, I forget what car she had. We had two cars and she had a car at that time. But we just realized we need our cars to fit a family.
Yes.
So we had to go sell the black Ford Probe. But that was probably
very cool.
My favorite. Yeah.
Very cool. We, borrowed a car for a while. So it was one of the friend of ours. They had a lease car. They were abroad and said, like, we just want the car used. We don't want it just sitting there for ages.
Yeah, yeah.
And we really needed a second car at the time, but couldn't really afford it. And they said, look, we'll pay the lease. You know, you just have to put the fuel in the thing. And so we got an Audi TT. I don't know if you've seen these. No. I got a picture for you. It was a two-door sports car.
Wow.
Absolutely loved it. Like, fast. Hugged the road, really nice. Slightly awkward thing that our church had a lot of drug issues around the church.
Okay.
A lot of drug dealers in the area. And I realize when you turn up in a metallic black, blacked out IDTT, and people would come out of church and be like, oh, who's parking now? And so I started driving to church early and leaving late because I was slightly embarrassed about how nice this car was. And I like loud music when I drive. So imagine a loud music, two-door, blacked out.
Thumping was the bass kind of thumping.
So I looked like a drug dealer when I was actually a pastor. So, you know, there's that. But Miriam loved it. That was my surprise. I've always wanted a Mazda MX-5 two-seat car, roadster. I've always wanted one, always wanted to drive one. It's just like my favorite car. And Miriam's always kind of been against it. One, I'm never going to have one as a pastor. But two, she's just never been keen on that kind of small, fast, sporty car. And then we got to drive this IDTT and she loved it.
Nice.
So there, I live in hope.
I remember, so again, not a huge car guy, but I was speaking in Springfield, Missouri, actually at a church pastored by one of our trustees here, Elaine Harrison. And we had car trouble. We got there and our car, the steering wheel locked up. We were parked. And it was the kind of thing where, like, we called AAA. I couldn't figure out how to unlock the steering column. And it was, you know, AAA showed up and they're like, yeah, this is actually a significant issue. This isn't just like push a button. It just has to go to a mechanic. So we had to take the car to the mechanic, but we had to get back home.
Yeah.
And so we rented a car from the airport there in Springfield. And all they had that they could give me was a Dodge Charger.
Oh, wow.
And brother, I did not want to give that Dodge Charger up. And in fact, after I gave the Dodge Charger up and we were in the market for another car, a used car, but new to us, I looked for a Dodge Charger because it was so fun. And the closest I could find, I actually went to a dealership where they had a Dodge Charger and it was already sold. And they're like, well, we've got this. It's pretty close. It's the Chrysler 300, and which doesn't look like a Dodge Charger. It kind of drove similarly, honestly. It was the worst car I ever owned.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare. It was like the joy of joys when we got rid of that car.
It's funny, for not being a car guy, for someone that doesn't like driving, you like two-seat fast cars.
I guess so. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe you're just,
I
your,
mean,
your
I have driving anxiety, so maybe that's maybe driving that's too why. Fast in those cars.
Okay, right. What's next?
My second question. This one's a little lighter.
Okay.
Like yours
I've
little
got
lighter.
A heavier one, so.
And it's connected, I think. So in the first grab bag, I think I asked you, what did you want to be when you grew up? When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? Similar question, and I'm going to assume it's not the same answer, but maybe it is. If you could do something today other than pastoring, what would you do? Dream job that's not ministry.
So back in the last grab bag, I answered that I wanted to be a police officer.
A police officer, yeah.
That was kind of my dream. If I was to not pastor and I was to go and work in something now, I think there's various things I'm good at that it would make sense for me to do. The thing that wouldn't necessarily make sense to do and probably wouldn't feed my family is I would cut grass.
Okay. I bet you could feed a family if you cut grass.
So in my student days, I worked for a stately home in the UK. The guy that owned it was a sir, and my job was to cut the grass, and there was a helicopter pad, and you had to cut the grass in a perfect line shape and all this sort of stuff, ride-on mowers, rotary mowers. I then worked on a farm, and one of my job was to cut the grass all along the edges of the fields. It was an organic farm, so you had to do everything by hand. You couldn't spray anything, so we cut grass on that. And I've always just loved cutting grass at home. It's where, like, we used to.
I gotta cut my grass today. You wanna come over?
I mean, I'm more honestly, when you mentioned one day in a sermon that you hate cutting grass, and I was just looking at you going, different.
I like grass to have been cut.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I like the smell of cut grass, I like the look of cut grass. We have a campus ops team here on the seminary, and for their budget and what they can do, like, they do a good job. But there's that day where you kind of walk through the campus and you think, this is perfect day for cutting grass. They need to be out cutting the grass. It's going to be too long now. And, you know, this is, for me, I like being physical for a job. So that's actually something I struggle with as a pastor. I don't like sitting down for long periods of time. If I can, I'll do visitation via a walk. Like, I'll go for a walk with somebody. So yeah, cutting grass is just something I really enjoy. I get like really geeked out on how to get a perfect line and how to get the perfect shade and how do you deal with weeds in the grass. And, you know, so and I've tried lots of different, like, zero turns, Toros are probably one of my favorites. And on the farm, we use a John Deere zero turn. So yeah, just, and here's part of how crazy I am. When I first met Miriam, this is years ago now, you know, maybe 17 years ago, we needed to cut the grass at our mother's house. And she had a pretty decent amount of grass, but we had a push mower. And Miriam hadn't yet learned, even at that age, I was super into grass cutting. Okay. And she went up and down three lines, and I saw a couple of tufts of grass. And she had missed.
She wasn't overlapping.
She wasn't overlapping a little bit. Yeah. Miriam has never cut grass since. Because for me, that's my job now. Mm. So yeah, I would probably run my own grass cutting company. And I would probably do homes rather than businesses. People like yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And stop.
Not me. I cut my own grass. Not like that.
You lazy hack bones your grass.
Ronnie Martin. He does hire somebody.
Hire somebody else. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I think being outside, getting a suntan, listening to podcasts while cutting some good grass.
My neighbor mowed his yard yesterday, blew the lawn clippings all over the sidewalk and driveway, and just went back inside and was done.
Oh, no.
I was like, sure,
he's going to come back out.
Because sometimes like I have to go in shifts. Like last week when I mowed, I have a cordless or a battery.
So there's your issue.
Weed eater.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've gone through so many weed eaters. I'm done with the gas, with the oil gas ones. They always break down. So I have this one, and you have to recharge the battery.
Yes.
And it works fine. But the battery charger wasn't plugged in. I'd unplugged it to plug something in. I forgot. So I had to wait a couple of hours to be able to do the weed whacking because I had to charge that battery. So I understand. When he was done, I was outside, and when he finished, I was like, oh, he's going to come back out and sweep that or blow that off. No, this morning I walked out all over everywhere.
And if it rains, it then gets sticky.
To me, it's so tacky.
Yep.
And maybe something come up. I don't know. But today I'm mowing my yard and I'm definitely clearing off his sidewalks and stuff because it just looks cruddy.
Here's a cultural engagement moment. In America, you call a weed eater and weed whacking.
Yeah.
In the UK, we call a strimmer and strimming.
Strimmer and strimming.
Yeah.
Okay.
We use a strimmer to strim.
I think that's a rap group over here. Strimmer.
I have no idea. But we have one of our sponsors for being here on our visa. They have 5 acres and a slightly older couple. And when we go and visit them, we love cutting their grass. I'm always out there. Like it doesn't even need cut. And I'm like, I'll cut it. So that's mine.
I think my first job started after school and I did it even a year into college. And so I worked at a church maintenance.
Yeah.
And it involved a lot of, acreage,
that surprises
soccer fields
me
and everything. Yeah. And in Houston heat in the summer, where it's just like you want to put your head under a water, spigot when you're done. And I like the riding mower. We even had a tractor. We did, tractor a little bit. That was all right. But to me, it was like, I don't enjoy this.
Yeah.
This is not what I like. And so then when we lived in Vermont, I had acreage. And so I had my riding mower and it was an all day thing. I mean, it was just. Yeah. That's what you're doing on Saturday is you're mowing this, the whole deal. That's just not restful to me. Yeah. It's not
you
enjoyable
get up early,
to me.
So it's not the heat of the day.
So it's just not great.
Okay, here's my question.
Okay.
Let me set up a little bit. You've been in seminary circles for a little while now. You've trained through the classroom, other guys and girls for ministry. You have trained people through the church, been a pastor for a little while. When somebody comes to you and says, I want to be involved in ministry. So whether that's a pastor, whether that's someone at church, it doesn't really matter what type of ministry, but just they're coming to you saying, I would like to serve the church or be in ministry. What is one key thing they often lack and how can they not lack it? How can they gain that? So whether it's a skill, an attitude, whatever it is, but what's the key thing that most people lack as they approach doing ministry and how do they resolve that? I'm going to limit you to
really
one.
That's a really interesting question. I've thought about this a little bit because the book that I'm working on right now, about halfway through writing, is on pastoral mentoring. And I just had a little section on the things that seminary students often lack.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'd be like the number one thing or the key thing. I'm not sure what that would be. But one thing I sometimes see or often see is a confusing of theological interest for a call to serve the church. It doesn't mean that they're not called to serve the church, I suppose. But what I want to see is somebody who actually loves the church.
Yeah.
That they care for people.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just, I like to get up and speak, or I like to lead something or, you know, my dad was a preacher and so I want to be a preacher. And that's fine if your dad was a preacher and you want to be a preacher. But I think there's sometimes what I'm not hearing, which is I care about people. I want to help people follow Jesus. I'd like to hear more like an understanding of the church.
Yeah.
So often, especially among young people, and I think part of this is just being young, but part of it is it's so wrapped up in our own ambition of self-fulfillment.
Yeah.
What position I'm going to have, what I'm going to do, what I will feel fulfilled doing, et cetera. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that per se, but it's just when it's not connected to serving people and loving people and helping people see Jesus and helping lost people see Jesus. I mean, when it's so disconnected from actually the church and what the church is, and it's just about my career ambition or my feeling fulfilled, that's kind of the thing that I think I'd love to hear more, especially from younger people about.
I'm thinking in like a wider church context, non-seminary, I feel like I've heard this along the lines of, you know, I want to be on the welcoming team. Why? I'm just somebody that's really open and bubbly. You think, okay, that's more about you than it is about wanting to say, I want when people come to church to feel really welcomed and I feel like I can do that well. Do you know, the active facing towards others rather than look what I can do. I think that's a good way.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's the number one thing but that's the first thing that kind of comes to mind is people who, and I think like the outcome of that for someone who, for instance, will go and take a pastorate is 3-4 years in.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is real. Like these are real people.
Yeah.
You know? And they're, and not, you know, I think for most guys in their first pastorate, you're not really prepared.
No.
You know, even if you like go in with eyes wide open, you're more prepared, but you just never gonna be prepared, you know, for that first experience. But I think more could be better positioned to weather that early storm that tends to hit if they went in thinking as much about how do I love these people or love a people of God as much as they did about how do I fulfill my ambition for this thing or my aspiration for this thing.
I feel like that's one of the things you talk about in the pastoral ministry class, that kind of idea of when people take your class, they may leave at the end thinking, I really want to serve the church. Or they may leave going, yep, I'm not going to be a pastor. And I feel like that is the issue. Mm-hmm. Like, do you want to love people? Love people that don't know the theological terms, that aren't actually interested in you giving a lecture, want you to turn up when you're cutting grass to just serve you and the family during hard times. Do you know, like, are you going to be that person? And it's really interesting. I see that at the seminary. You get a bunch of guys coming and going, pastoral ministry. And I don't know what the percentage is, but it feels like half end up going, this isn't for me. And I feel like that's the central
I think for
reason.
A lot, I mean, and this is true for me, I suppose, in some ways, I think for a lot of especially young guys, like what they see of pastoral ministry is the visible thing, and they haven't really been exposed to the behind the scenes.
I agree.
Even just the drudgery of admin and things like that. But they're not in pastoral care situations. Yeah. They're not in visitation. You know, I mean, you know, some are. But I just think what they see is there's a guy on stage who's speaking, everyone's listening to him, or he's got good answers, or he's smart, or he's dynamic, or he's creative, or whatever it is. And I think that's what I want to do. Yeah. And so that's what their equation of ministry is. And when it turns out that that's actually like 20% of what ministry actually is, they suddenly like, I'm not sure this is actually for me. Yeah. And it's interesting in the ministry class how many guys you can see of like they've literally never thought about what 80% of ministry is.
Yep. Yep.
You know, they're thinking preaching and studying. And
even come to the people part in an academic way. So one of the things I used to love doing is when you get like a bunch of things in your life and you have questions like this is tie them all together. I feel what we need to do, me and you, we need to run a grass cutting company with a 2-seater car, pulling a lawnmower, hiring only decisive and hardworking people for the sake of the people.
That just sounds like a diaconate.
It does.
That's
actually
the dream deacon team, right there.
I mean, I don't know if I want my deacons to be driving 2-seat cars everywhere.
That's true.
But, I like these grab bags because I feel like you just genuinely don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
So
that's good. We'll have to do another one sometime. Yeah. If you enjoy the podcast, dear listener, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.